I got a shayla last week. I had the privilege of sitting, as I often do, on Friday morning with Rav Schechter in the OU office and a couple of other rabbanim. And another rabbi texted me the following shayla, and he told me that this is from a person who is an Israeli doctor visiting in Idaho for 1 week out of the month. And that's, I guess, it's a female doctor. That's her professional setup. And, you know, a lot of people who live in Israel will come in to work here. So she comes to work 1 week out of the month in Idaho. So she texted this other rabbi the following. It seems my order of kosher food never shipped. If I'm stuck for Shabbos with one juice box of grape juice, do I use it for Kiddush tonight or tomorrow? I have rolls for the other. So essentially you have a woman here that has one cup of grape juice and she's got, or one juice box of grape juice, and she's got challah rolls, the bag of challah rolls. So what should she do? How should she prioritize Kiddush Friday night, Kiddush Shabbos day? She doesn't even mention Abdullah, but that's going to be an issue as well. How do you prioritize all of those things? That's shayla number one. Shayla number two, over the summer I got a couple of emails about this, in different ways. One from a with a link to a mezuzah company that sells mezuzahs online, and another to a jewelry company, but it's the same idea. Apparently in 2003, the Muslim religious authority that administers the Temple Mount started to do massive construction on Har HaBayis in Yerushalayim, and in the course of the construction, they did a ton of excavation. The excavation was done without any regard to the extreme archaeological sensitivity of the spot, which contains stones from the ruins of both the first and second Batei Mikdash, and they took the excavated material, hauled it to a garbage dump in the Kidron Valley outside of the old city of Yerushalayim, and just dumped it all over there. So at that time, according to this website, an artist in Israel who heard about this story decided to go to the dump, collect as many of these holy stones as he could, and he formed these stones into mezuzahs. And in this way, he felt he could salvage something of the original holiness that these stones had. It also doesn't hurt that a typical mezuzah case would cost, a couple of dollars, and now he could charge like $80 for them. So, but, you know, that, I'm sure the kavanah is l'shem shemayim. He wanted to salvage the kedusha to use it for tashmishe kedusha to be used for mezuzah. So someone sent me a link to that website where they sell these mezuzahs. Is this mutter? Are you allowed to have such a mezuzah in the house? Someone else sent me a link to a different website that wasn't selling mezuzahs, selling jewelry. With the same idea, they found the same garbage dump, and they found stones from the rabbis. And like, I guess the advertisement is, you can wear a piece of the Kodesh HaKadoshim around your neck, right? And then the shayla is, can you go to the bathroom with a piece of the Kodesh HaKadoshim around your neck? Can you say Divrei Chulin with a piece of? Can you have a piece of the Kodesh HaKadoshim? You don't know. You don't know where those stones. It could be a totally benign, meaningless stone, or it could be something very, very big. You have no idea what it is. So, what is the kedusha status of that? Then the third shayla I got just the other day, a guy sent me the following email. I asked Rishus if I could use this shayla. I said, I'll change all the details. He said, you don't have to change all the details, just use the shayla, it's fine. So here it is. He writes, Rabbi Leibowitz, I'm sorry to keep bombarding you with emails, never a problem as long as they're good. He said, I recently made my sister-in-law's shidduch. I found a guy in shul and told her I found the man of her dreams. It's pretty confident, right? But he was right. He was 31, she was 25, and this guy made the shidduch. After two dates, he asked for an outsider to be the shadchan, which is reasonable, I think, right? Very often, if you're dealing with someone who's a very close relative of one side, so then it's not really even. So he asked for an outsider to be the shadchan. After the following date, they stopped using the shadchan. They got engaged. My in-laws gave me and the other shadchan standard shadchanus, meaning whatever payment it is for a shadchanus. But the other side told my in-laws that they don't believe in shadchanus or something along those lines, and they paid nobody. Now, I don't necessarily need the $1,000 or so. I guess that's the assumption of how much shadchanus is from each side. I don't know. Does anyone know? Going great. He would know better. Okay. All right. He says, I don't need the $1,000 or so, but I find it extremely disrespectful to shell out money for alcohol and other extras at the wedding and to completely ignore the shadchan and not pay me or at least have the courtesy to say thank you. I think the thank you part is even more problematic, right? The staff courtesy the same thing. This family happens to be close with the Rebbe of yours, v'chule v'chule, so he wants to know if I can maybe approach that Rebbe and have him give them mussar. So then he says, should I try to find it within me to be mochel? I worry about some horror stories told of those who don't pay shadchanus and therefore feel that I should try to be mochel. But I'm not sure, even if I speak this out, that even as I speak it out, that I'm mochel, that I really feel this way. I was the shliach for two older, picky singles who were having a hard time in shiduchim, and I made the shiva. So I'm not so ready to be mochel. So eitza, halacha, hashkafa, what do you think? Right, that's the shayla. Okay, so we have three shaylas. We have the woman in Idaho with one cup of grape juice. We have the mezuzahs and the jewelry with pieces of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, perhaps. And we have the shadchan question and mechila. Two, really? Okay, wasn't expecting that. All right. Okay, so we'll discuss number two first. Let me just baruch atah Adonai lehinam alcham shakol miyavidvaro. Someone told me they were listening to a shiur. Oh, you just know they're listening to a shiur on Yitzhorah, and the Magid Shiur said a bracha, and they answered Amen. So they said, is that an Amen Yisoma when you're? Because like he's not really saying the bracha when you're listening. That's a good question. Okay, what?
Number four.
Probably is, right? Yeah, probably is. Okay. But I don't know, got to think about that one. Maybe next week. We'll talk about that one. Okay. So going to this question of the stones that are used for these mezuzahs and for these, and on the mezuzah website, by the way, it says no two of these mezuzahs are the same because they're not manufacturing these stones. They're just taking stones that they're finding. So, one of the good tricks when preparing shiurim, if you want to find resources, there's this great thing, you may not have heard of it. It's called Google. You can, there's like a wealth of information out there. But I'm just joking, you all heard of Google. But there's an even better thing called Google Hebrew. When you Google something in Hebrew and you include the word halacha with anything, you get much higher quality stuff than when you Google in English. Essentially, there are a lot more Talmidei Chachamim in Israel that are writing things, that are writing essays on significant topics, than there are in America. So, at least the quality is much higher. So you get much better quality stuff. So I found an article from a journal called Malin Bakodesh, volume 26 of Malin Bakodesh. I never heard of the journal before. Maybe some of you have. I don't know. The journal called Malin Bakodesh, volume 26, Elul Tavshinayin Gimel, an article by Rav Yaakov Epstein. I don't know who Rav Yaakov Epstein is, but the article he wrote is very beautiful, very nice, organized article. But it was on a slightly different topic. His topic was that they were doing. You ever do like when you go to Israel, do dig for a day? You get to be an archaeologist for a day. So I did this with my family when we were in Israel, and we went to some. It wasn't in the Har Havayis. We went to some. You've done it. We went to some place, I don't even know where it was, and you dig up random pieces of pottery, you stumble all sorts of Avodah Zarah. Like, it wasn't even Jews that lived there, it was just like over the Avodah Zarah. So we're digging up, these collections of Avodah Zarah from, I'm a little suspicious that, we find like whole pieces of pottery and they're like Koreo Mishtachavet to us, Chashuv archaeological find. I have no doubt that the second we leave, they chuck it right back in there so that the next family can find, apparently they did a dig for a day program with kids from schools where they went through Har Habayis stuff, where they actually went through archaeological digs in Har Habayis. And the shaila was that this Rav Yaakov Epstein wrote an article about was what's the halachic status of that, of the dirt that they're digging through, of whatever it is that they may find, the klei cheres, other kelim that they may find. In the end, he says there's no chance they're giving little kids, little school children, anything that has any archaeological significance. So whatever they're giving them is from like the outskirts of the Har Havayis, if that. You know, there's no way an archaeologist would trust kids with something that's actually highly sensitive. But he discusses a number of important issues over here. First thing is, what exactly is the Kedusha of Har Havayis? So on a certain level, we know Har Havayis has Kedusha. On what level do we know it has Kedusha? Afilu b'zman hazeh? How many of you have ever been on Har Havayis? Not many. Why not? It's a holy place. Wouldn't you want to go to a holy place? We're Tamei, right? We're Tamei. What kind of Tumah? Tumas Meis, you're allowed to go on Har Havayis. Tamei Meis is not allowed to go on the Azar, but you're allowed to go on Har Havayis with Tumas Meis. So those who do go on Har Havayis, there are religious Jews that go on Har Havayis, a growing number actually of religious Jews that go on Har Havayis. Those that do it know that there's no Parah Aduma, so they know that they're not getting rid of Tumas Meis, so they're definitely Tamei Meis. But a Tamei Meis is allowed to go on Har Havayis, but someone who's Tamei Tumas Ziva or Nida is not allowed to go on Har Havayis. So for a woman, she has to make sure she's not a Nida anymore, and we have to make sure that we're not a Zav when we go on Har Havayis. So how do we make sure we're not a Zav? Chazal goes there that every Amaretz has the status of a Zav. So that's why some poskim argue that we can't go on Har Havayis even if we go to the mikveh, because the mikveh is mitar you from tumas zav. But Chazal goes there that every ama aretz has the status of a zav, so a mikveh is not going to change the fact that we're ama aretz, right? That's still going to be there. So the gzeres Chazal is still going to be there. Where others argue, no, Chazal goes there, we have a din of tumas zav because it could be that we become a zav and we wouldn't know about it. But if you go to the mitzvah, you're not a Zav anymore, then you go on Har Havayis. Okay, big discussion. Most of the Gedolei Eretz Yisrael have paskin not to go on Har Havayis. I once asked Mori Rabbi Rav Shachter about this. He said, La halacha, I would say if they asked me that you're allowed to go if you go to the mikvah. But it's not my Shaila to paskin. It's the Gedolei Eretz Yisrael's Shaila to paskin. And they all paskin that you're not allowed to go, so don't go. So he told us that practically we shouldn't go. He said, but really, really, if the Gedolei Eretz Yisrael said that you can go, then you have to go. I mean, if you hold that you can go, then you have to go, because then you have to show that it means something to us. The world shouldn't say, oh, the Jews don't care about Har Havayis, only the Muslims care about it. Okay, fine, very interesting topic. Har Havayis definitely has Kedusha on that level. But what about like actual Kedusha in terms of Me'ilah, in terms of that kind of thing? Is there an Isser of Hana'ah from Har Havayis? So that's a little bit trickier. You know, the Gemara in Zvachim and Daf Chav Dalet has a discussion about David being Mekadesh, the Ritzbas HaAzara. And the Gemara discusses, you know, there are two discussions in Halacha about this. How far up does the Kedusha go, and how far down does the Kedusha go? So the more modern discussion is how far up does the Kedusha go? Can you take a helicopter ride over Har Havayis, right? Do we assume that the Kedusha goes straight up? But there's also discussion in the Gemara, the older discussion, how far down does the Kedusha go? So the Gemara assumes l'maskana in Zvachim Chavdalit, Ad Aris Tahoma, the Kedusha's Hazara, all the way down. And that's a Kedusha in terms of Me'ilah and everything. So the question is, the Gemara never says that about Kedusha's Har Havayis, only about Kedusha's Ha'azara. So Rav Zilberstein in the Sefer Aleinu L'Shabeach argues that with Mar Makomos that the ground of Har Havayis doesn't have the inherent Kedusha that would be subject to Me'ilah. Only the ground of the Azara, and therefore there's no Isra Anah, no Isra Me'ilah to be mishtamish with the ground of Har Havayis, only the ground of the Azara. Now, do we know exactly what the Arabs were excavating and what they were digging around and what they dumped in the Kidron Valley? Do we have any idea? So I don't know if we know. I don't know if we know if they were working around the area of the Azara. Right. So these are tricky things to figure out exactly what spot is the Azara. We can figure it out roughly, but to figure out exactly is very, very challenging. There also seems to be, what if you find like Kalim, right? So you find Klei Cheres, let's say. So Klei Cheres are not Klei Shares, right? They're not Klei Shares, but they may have Blios of Hegdish in it. The Gemara talks about that as well in Yuma Daf Chaf Aleph, that Shivrei Klei Cheres are Nivloin B'Mekoman. Why? Because they have Blios of Kachim in it. And what's the problem if it has Blios of Kachim? Well, you can't Kasher Klei Cheres, and the Blios of Kachim are going to be problematic. Why? They become Nosa. almost, right? They become nosim. Now they become, they're way old nosim, but they become nosim 2 days in, right? Or a day, and depending on what kind of carbon it is. So klecheres might have their own problems in terms of using them, but kedusha probably does not have. From a broken clay cheres, probably not. If it's a broken clay, it's broken into pieces. Shvirasin's, you know, is matired. I don't know. Probably not. But then you know, I asked Rav Shach the shaila. He said it's a davar pashut. You know, the shaila doesn't even start. Uvo bapritzim v'chiluluha. Whatever kedusha there was, it's long since been mischalel. You know, the sugya in Avodah Zarah tells us on Daf Nun Beis, I think, that when they wanted to, when the Goyim used the mizbeach and the menorah for Avodah Zarah, it became asur ba'anah. I ain't not the most adavar sheino shlo. How could they ask for something that's ours and is kadosh and whatever, right? How can they have the koach to ask for such things, right? If I walk out of my house in the morning, I always give this example. If I walk out of my house in the morning, I happen to drive a very, very, very fancy car. It's called the Toyota Corolla. It is fantastic. Yeah, it is. It is. It's really. So when I walk out of my house in the morning, my neighbor who never drives a Mercedes might get jealous, right? So I could walk out of my house and I see my neighbor bowing down to my car. Like, you know, it's pretty chashuv. So I see him bowing down to my car. So now do I have to worry that my car is asur ba'anah because it became avodah zarah? My neighbor's bowing down to my car. So no, the halacha is that it's not asur ba'anah. But avodah zarah is asur ba'anah. No, you know, the most adavar sheino shlo. It's not his. He doesn't have the right to asur it. So the Gemara explains, yeah, but once they were mechalal it, they were koned with that chilul, and therefore the second time they used it, it was already chulin. It wasn't kodesh, and it already becomes asur like avodah zarah. So the idea of the chilulua is a real idea. It actually became chulin. Whatever they destroyed became chulin. That's what the Chassam Sofer in the Tshuvah, Yardeis and Reish on the Gimel, discusses why it is. You know, the Gemara is a discussion what day to observe Tisha B'Av. A well-known Gemara in Titus, right? Should it be on the ninth day of Av, which obviously it is, but Rabbi Yochanan says, no, if I would have been there when they were having that discussion, you know, imagine some sort of meeting of great rabbis, you know, where they were discussing how should we commemorate this, when should we commemorate. He said, if I would have been there, I would have done it on Yud Ba'av. Why? What was the Svara? Most of it burnt on Yud Ba'av. So says the Chassam Sofer, so Taka, why do we do Tisha B'Av? That's the whole Chakira in Halacha, when you have, like we had this past year and this coming year, when Tisha B'Av falls out on the Shabbos and you observe it on the Sunday. Is it that the Iker Takana is Yud Ba'av for those years, or that it's a Nidcha, right? That it's with many Nafkaminas. Is there a Shua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av? Do you have Kulas of like a Shartanesim, or is it only like, or do you have to treat it with all the Chumras of a Tisha B'Av as far as people who have trouble fasting, okay, but what's the svara? Why don't we paskin like where Rabbi Yochanan would have said? So says the Chassam Sofer, the second they lit it on fire, it all became chulin. Whatever was continuing to burn was chulin already. It was already chul. So even though it's true most of it was burning, but the second they started destroying it, it already became chulin, and that's the ikur churban. The ikur churban is the loss of kedusha, and that happened on the ninth day of Av. So it would seem that since it's all chulin, it's all technically mutter, even if you do have a piece of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, even if you do have a piece of the Mikdash. Now, it also loses a little bit of its appeal, right? The whole idea is you're getting a piece of the Kedusha, but if Chululua, and there is no piece of Kedusha to be had, you're not really getting a piece of the Kedusha. So you sort of have to, you know, play both sides a little bit. It's nostalgic anyway, even if it's not a piece of the Kedusha. That's that's the way to argue, yeah? Oh, so there's a further discussion whether the ground, once you remove it from that location, has any Kedusha. There's a good argument to be made that the Kedusha's hamakom of the ground is only when it's there. But you know, you take dirt and you bring it somewhere else, it could be that doesn't... But the binyan itself, the materials that they use, that they have to purchase using the Trumas HaLishcha or whatever else, right? So that has Kedusha no matter where you take it. But it could be that the ground So that's also a discussion he has in that same article. In the Sefer Torah HaKodesh, Chelek Beis Siman Zayin, he quotes that Chakira about the ground. So there's a good argument to be made about that as well. Now, Rav Moshe has a discussion, a long tshuva, in Chelek Dalet Siman Samach Gimel, Os Yud Beis, and not Os Yud Beis, the whole tshuva. Os Yud Beis discusses one prat about... That I'm going to mention, but he has a long tshuva about people who I guess were so excited in 1967 that we had the Kotel again, we had access to the Kotel again, that they went up to the Kotel and started chiseling pieces off and taking home memento from the Kotel, like Lahavdil Elif Alfi Avdolos, when they tore down the old Yankee Stadium and the old Shea Stadium. Like online, you could buy a seat from the. There's a guy in my shul who's a little nuts about this kind of stuff. In his basement, he's got seats from the old Shea Stadium, you know, that they're super not comfortable and whatever. And he paid, I don't know how much he paid for these seats. But so the people were going in and chiseling. Can you imagine getting that through security even nowadays? Like the chisel and the thing, right? So the people were taking from the Kotel. So Rav Moshe has a tshuva about why he doesn't think that that's a very good idea. Not allowed to do that, but in Os Yud Beis he points out that the chilul never happened on the Kotel because it was still standing. I mean, it was only on those parts that were destroyed that we assume that the chilul actually happened. You may have heard in the summertime a piece of the Kotel came off, a stone fell off of the Kotel, almost hit someone. It just landed in the section, I think it said, where the women of the wall hang out. So in that section, a piece fell off. So the Shaila Rav Rabinovich, who's the Rav of the Kotel, the Kol Mosei Kedoshim, had to deal with. He's the one you see in all the pictures whenever the president goes to the Kotel. He's the rabbi of the Kotel. The Kotel is the most busy shul in the world, so he's the shul rabbi of the busiest shul in the world. He's got a lot of. He has beautiful tshuvas for him called Shari Tzion. He has two volumes of shailas that come up in the Kotel. You know, there are a lot of interesting shailas that come up. So this mistama will be in Chela Gimel. What do you do with the stone that falls off? So the truth is, the stone that fell off is probably did not have that level of kedusha, because there were parts that were added later on. So it likely was from who was it, Moses Montefiore or something in the 19th century, I think, added parts to the Kotel. So it's very likely that when it falls from the highest part, that's where it came from. So that certainly does not have that level of kedusha. Rav Moshe, when he talks about chiseling stones off the Kotel, says it's a violation not only of Me'ila, but it's also a violation of Sasun Kein LaHashem Elokecha. There is a mitzvah in the Torah that you go into Eretz Yisrael, you see Avodah Zarah and Mekomos Avodah Zarah. You have a mitzvah to destroy those places of Avodah Zarah. But then the Torah says, and lo sasun kein l'Hashem Elokeichem. You don't do that to Mekomos HaKadoshim. So to rip off a piece of the Kotel is a violation of lo sasun kein l'Hashem Elokeichem. Okay, there is a discussion whether now that it's off, once the piece is off, does it still have any kedusha? There's a Magen Avram that seems to assume that a stone that's taken from a makom kadosh is only kadosh as long as it's still connected. Once it's off, it's no longer kadosh. However, the Chasam Sofer in the Tshuva disagrees. He thinks it's a Beferish Gemara against it, because the Gemara says in Maseches Makos that if you use wood from the Beis HaMikdash to cook, it's a violation of the Sasam Kain. What do you mean? You're using wood from the Beis HaMikdash to cook by lighting the Beis HaMikdash on fire in its place? No, obviously you took it off of the Beis HaMikdash and then you used it to cook, and it's still a violation of Los Asim Kain even after it's removed. Okay, so bottom line, as far as this jewelry is concerned, as far as this mezuzah is concerned, is there any problem in buying it? Doesn't seem that there's any problem in buying it. Doesn't seem that there's any isser. Adrabah, like you said, even if there were some kedusha to it, it's munach b'bizayon in a garbage dump somewhere. So to salvage it, to use as a mezuzah. But don't you have to be worried? It's not going to be used properly. You can go into the bathroom. It doesn't really have kedusha anymore. So you don't have to worry about the mezuzah. You don't have to worry about the bathroom, obviously. But even a piece of jewelry, lechari, you don't have to worry. So it's more problematic. We once discussed buying those the jewelry that they write psukim on. That's more problematic because you can't walk into the bathroom with. But something that's actually could have come from the Beis HaMikdash is a little bit less problematic. Okay, we have time for maybe one. Yeah. What? Based on the idea of chilul, what? Yeah, yeah, it's all chulin. All right, which other one should we do? Three, the mechila one. Okay. So you know, anyone here ever make a shidduch? Nobody. Okay, got to work harder, guys. Got to make shidduchim. If you go out with someone and it's not for you, think: is it for my friend? Is it you know? You got to be thinking along these lines. What? That's a good question. Two. Not me, my wife really, but I take credit. I happen to be very bad at it, but I'm not good at coaching people. I think it's more about coaching people through the process than it is about like envisioning like who would fit well with each other. I once got a call from a close friend of mine. No, my wife got a call from a close friend of hers, asking her to set her up with a close friend of mine. She had her eye on this guy. She wanted to be set up. We said it's a terrible idea. It's never going to work. But if you really want us to do it, you're a good friend. We'll do it. So we called them up. We set it up. They're married. So they gave us Shanchanis gifts because we set it up, even though we discouraged it. We thought it was a terrible idea. It's really no suit. It's one of our close friends. Part of our... Yeah. Okay. So anyway. So Shanchanis, to me, like the couple of times that we did it, the people bought us a gift or gave us money or whatever. Like it was very nice of them, but like we didn't think of it in those terms. But you know, I always felt like, you know, okay, so you're doing a mitzvah, you're doing something good. Why do you have to be so insistent on the dini mamonos of it? But it turns out there is rich halachic literature on an absolute chiyuv in dini mamonos for shadchanos. That a shadchan, like anyone else who does a job for you, provides a service for you, and adrabba, provides about the most important service you could ever have provided for you, so deserves to be compensated for it. You know, it may seem strange, but you know that's the halacha. The Gemara in Bava Metzia and Daf, there's a lot of Bava Metzia over here. Gemara in Bava Metzia and Daf Samach Gimel and Beis says that you have to pay a broker's fee to someone who arranges to sell an apartment, a house, merchandise, anything. This is quoted in Shulchan Aruch and Chosh Mishpat Simen Kuf Pei Hei, and specifically when it comes to shadchanos, the Rama writes this. The Rama writes that you have to pay a shadchan for schar pu'ulaso. He did work, so you have to pay him for it. There's even though it's definitely true that it's a mitzvah, but you know, a sofer writing tefillin is also a mitzvah. You pay him when you buy a pair of tefillin. You pay him when you buy, right? So it's definitely a mitzvah to be mezavik zvugim. Shulchan Aezer writes, what's the mitzvah? To be davik b'Hakadosh Baruch Hu. That the Gemara says in a couple of places, mahu afata, that we're supposed to mimic the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mezavik zivugim. So we too should try to be mezavik zivugim. We should try to make shiduchim. Darkei Tshuva discusses, can you do a shidduch for a non-Jew? I think we once had one of these shirim on that, whether you're allowed to do a shidduch for a non-Jew. Interesting discussion. The Netziv has a shayla, can you do a shidduch for a non-religious Jew? What would be the problem with doing a shidduch for a non-religious Jew? Mistamish, you're not going to go to mikvah, it's going to be lifnei iver on Nisr Karis of Nida. So are you allowed to do that? And the Tziv says, if you get paid for it, you can. If it's like, if you're the guy who runs Saw You at Sinai or whatever, or one of these, shidduch websites or whatever, so then you can. Then you're allowed to do it for non-religious Jew. But if you don't get paid for it, it's just out of the goodness of your heart, and the Tziv paskens, you're not allowed to, interestingly enough. But anyway, there's an entire chapter in Yisuin Kilchasa on the topic of shadchanos money and paying a shadchan or not paying it, or how much to pay a shadchan, when to pay a shadchan. The Rama even discusses, what if you never hired the shadchan? You never asked the person to find you a shidduch. This guy walked into shul, saw a 31-year-old guy, told his sister-in-law, I found the man of your dreams. She never asked him to find the man of her dreams, but he did, right? So would you pay for that anyway? The Rama says, absolutely. But Metzia Daf Kovalev. You go into someone else's property and you make significant improvements, even though they never asked you to do it. They have to pay for the improvements that you made. Okay, they don't pay you; they only pay you the lesser amount of either the increase in improvement or the investment made. They don't pay you the higher amount, but nevertheless, they do have to pay you for that. So over here, they have to pay you as well. Achronim discuss, what if there was no charge up front? Can they come back to you later and say, you should have paid us? Okay. And Marash Engel is explicit. It doesn't have to be a professional shadchan. even someone who has a perfectly good job and makes a decent living, and they just did this stunt, still you have an obligation to pay. Now, certainly, just like any other job, if let's say I'm a carpenter and I go and I build someone a shtender, so you know, my favorite rabbi, I go and I build him a shtender, so he may want to pay me. I have every right to be mochel, and then he has no obligation to pay me. So if you're a shadchan and you want to be mochel, that absolutely, you have every right to be mochel. He doesn't have to pay you. Who has to pay the shadchan? Chasan and Kala or the parents? What would you think? It's never pasha that it's chasan and Kala. Problem is, most of the time, chasan and Kala don't have any money, right? So who ends up paying? The parents end up paying. But really, it's the chiva of the chasan and Kala. Our minhag is that the parents pay. The Erech Shai in Choshen Mishpat Siman Kuf Pei says they should split it 50-50. And he says that it's the parents. That it's really the parents' obligation. The Avnei Nezer says, no, it's Pasha that it's Chasan Kala's obligation. Nafkamina, we're anyway, most of the time, we're going to have the parents pay. What if the parents don't pay? So now does it revert on the Chasan Kala? So the Avnei Nezer for sure does, because it's really Be'ikr, it's their Chiyuv. But according to the Erech Shai, it doesn't go to the Chasan Kala. It's not their Chiyuv, it's the parents' Chiyuv. L'chora, it should be the Chasan Kala's Chiyuv, because that's who it's a service for. Right? That's who's benefiting from it. You know, we had an interesting discussion last week. Rav Shechter was telling us about one of the Rabbanim from the OU came to ask him a shayla about some strange thing that happened at a wedding where the Masada Kiddushin like totally messed something up and didn't know what he was doing. And Rav Shechter was saying like he sees it all the time now that there are Masada Kiddushins that don't know anything about being Masada Kiddushin. They don't know any of the halachas. They don't know what they're doing. And he said, it, you know, what often happens is you have a guy who gets engaged and he feels a tremendous sense of hakaras hatov to a particular Rebbe. You know, Rebbe from Eretz Yisrael, who really helped turn his life around, who did such a great job with him and is such a wonderful Rebbe, but has zero experience being a Masada Kiddushin and never really learned through how to be a Masada Kiddushin. But the guy feels a kesher to that Rebbe, so he asks that Rebbe to be his Masada Kiddushin. And the Rebbe has no idea what he's doing. Not his fault. It's not what he does. You know, he's not a community rabbi. He's not someone who does this kind of thing. And he has no idea what he's doing. Rav Shechter was thinking about, like, is that right that a Rebbe from, you know, that the guy happens to have a shaychus with, but no one else in the whole audience has a shaychus with, is that right that he should be the Masada Kiddushin? So he says, what is Seder Kiddushin? Seder Kiddushin is you're honoring the person with saying the bracha, the Birchas Erusin. Whose bracha is it? So there's a discussion in Poskim, right? Is it a Birchas HaMitzvah or is it a Birchas HaShevach, beginning of Ksuvis, right? So if it's a Birchas HaMitzvah, whose mitzvah is it? So you could argue it's the Chassan's mitzvah, yeah? It's the Chassan's mitzvah. Then the Chassan would have the right to choose. No, has a discussion. What if the Chassan is deaf? Does the Masada Kiddushin still say the bracha for the Kala? Right? Is that good enough to say it for the Kala? Right? So because if the Chassan's mitzvah, then he can't be motzi the Chassan if he's deaf. So Nodibida says, no, it's a Kala's mitzvah also. The Kala is also a participant. So if that's the case, the Chassan and Kala should choose together who the Masada Kiddushin is. Rav Shechter pointed out, we paskin like neither, though. We don't paskin it's a Birchas HaMitzvah. We paskin it's a Birchas Shavach. If it's a Birchas Shavach, whose bracha is it? It's the audience's bracha. It's everybody's bracha. So it should be a Rav that everyone recognizes as a rabbi that's worthy of being a Masada Kiddushin. So Rav Shechter thought it wasn't right that they bring in some random rabbi that no one knows. That it should be the community rabbi. That's what he said. It should be someone that everyone in the audience recognizes as the community rabbi. It's interesting because I remember when I was in Rav Shechter's year, he told us that we should ask our high school rebbeim to be Masada Kiddushin. He said, by the time you get to me, you're a finished product already. What? I'm giving you a little more Torah. You already knew a whole, you know, you're ready to not learn. Who turned you on to learning in the first place? That's what should be Masada Kiddushin. I don't know. I guess he changed his mind. But it reminded me a little bit of this this discussion. Who should pay for shadchanas? The people who are benefiting from it. The people who it's for them should pay for the shadchanas. Now, if one side doesn't pay, does that mean that the other side has to pay? No. They didn't fulfill their chiyuv. That's their problem. You don't have to compensate for that. How much do you pay? So that's totally on minhag hamakom. So you have to find out what the minhag hamakom. In today's world, it's very tricky. right? What if Minhag HaMakom in Eretz Yisrael is to pay, I don't know, just to pick a number, 1,000 shekel, and Minhag HaMakom in America is to pay $1,000, right? Let's say. So I was just at a chassan recently, a guy from here, a Talmud of mine from DRS also, who, same guy, who his shadchan was Rav Resnick from the Mir, right? Right, Rav Resnick his name, right? That was his shadchan. The guy and the girl are both from the five towns. And I don't know for sure, but I would bet the going rate in the five towns for a shadchan is different than the going. So do you go by the makom of the shadchan, or do you go by the makom of the chasan and kala? It's a good shayla. I don't know. Not sure. I'm sure it's discussed. You look in the Yisum Gilchsa, I'm sure they discuss it. What about when you have multiple shadchanim? How do you divide it? Pesachei Tshuva discusses a family member helped push along a shidduch and then says that he's entitled to have the money, even though it's family. Pesachei Tshuva says, yeah, a family member also. Even if someone else took over, then you split it between the two. There's a discussion in Yisum Gilchsa. You suggest a shidduch. They go out on two dates and they end it. It doesn't work out. 6 months later, they decide to try again through a different shadchan. So who gets the shadchanus? Interestingly enough, Nisun Kilch says the second shadchan. And I think he quotes from a Chavis Yai or something, that the second shadchan gets it, because it's the one who actually brings it through to fruition. Which is interesting hashkafically, that it's not so much about making the suggestion, it's about who's able to coach them along and get them, because a lot of times that's a greater challenge. You know, as much as there is a small group of girls out there that would be easier for you to be married to than others, that you are more compatible with than others. It's likely you can make a marriage work with many, 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 you know, different types of people, and it's just a matter of how much you're willing to work at it and how much you're willing to put into the marriage and to be able to make sure that that it works and to develop a very deep sense of love and commitment to each other. Very often, the greatest challenge is, you know, a guy or a girl, I've only seen it from the guy's end, like totally freaks out right when they're almost at engagement. Completely, oh no, maybe this is totally wrong, maybe this, like, whoever coaches him there at that moment, that's the shadchan as far as I'm concerned. Whoever, like, you know, whether it's a therapist, a mashkiach, whatever, whoever coaches him at that point, that's really, and that's what the halacha said, that's what Nisun Kilchsa quotes. Okay, what about being mochel? So, generally speaking, if your shaila is, should I be mochel, should I not be mochel, what's the answer? Of course, be mochel. Of course, be mochel. I told Rav Willig, I was sitting at a chasana the other night, and Rav Mordechai Willig sat down right next to me at the chuppah. So I was like, "Oh, awesome! Okay, so this is." So I told him that I get more phone calls this year than ever before that I remember of people calling me up saying, "I just can't be mochel. I'm having such a problem letting go. This person cheated me out of money. This person did this to my family. This person, I just can't." And wanting to know, like, how to approach it. So I said to Rabbi Willig, like, how do I encourage someone to be mochel? He said, tell them, don't do it for the other person, do it for yourself. You will literally take years off of your life when you hold on to grudges. Literally take years off of your life. He said, he read in Time magazine, Gudmar Malcolm, he said he read in Time magazine 8 things that can cause you to live longer, and he said one of them is let go of grudges. That there's actual research on this topic, that if you hold on to it, it's killing yourself. That when you refuse to be mochel. Now it's true that if a person needs mechila, the obligation certainly falls squarely on their shoulders to ask for mechila. But we also have built into our tradition part of Tefillah Zaka before Kriyas Shema Lamita every night. You know, these ideas that we say, I am hereby mochel anyone who's wronged me, and it's good for you. And in some level, maybe not completely, it works for them as well. Meaning to grant them that mechila. So as Rav Willig, but let's say someone's mochel, the person who owes him money or cheated him out of money, and then ultimately that person pays back. Do they then have to say they're mochel? Can you be mochel the hard feelings without being mochel the money? He says, of course you can. Of course you can be mochel the hard feelings, and they can still owe you the money. Mechila in dine mamonis is not the same as mechila in dine ben adam. You know, so as a ben adam, and we know this is the greatest zuchus to be zochah biyom adin. Kol mavir al midosav, mavir lo kol peshav. That's how Kodesh Baruch Hu is gonna. You know, we're looking from a slichu mechila from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. You know, so we have to be able to be willing to be mochel other people. The mission Baba Kamadav Sadi Beis, person who's not mochel, all the mission is talking about when someone asks him for mechila, but a person who's not mochel is considered nachzari. So we should go out of our way to be extra careful to be mochel people. And sometimes, you know, a person does something terrible and it's hard, but a person who's a Baal Bitachon realizes that whatever they've done to me that's terrible, it didn't affect the outcome of my life one way or another. A Baal Bitachon realizes that Kodesh Baruch Hu puts in your path whatever he's going to put in your path. So, you know, it's only a question whether they have an aveira or they don't have an aveira. What's going to happen to me, whatever nisyonos I face, because of that person is going to come off of my cheshbon somewhere else, and I'm going to have an easier time with something else. That's why we have to work on our bitachon to that extent, where we don't think that what happens in our life is the fault of somebody else. To realize that it's completely in the hands of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So we should work very, very hard to absolutely be mochel everybody, and specifically if there's someone, this is just very important, if there's someone that you feel that you're not b'shalom with, it's a real shasa kosher the last few days, if it's a frum Jew that you feel that you're not b'shalom with, they're getting the same emails and you know, and videos in their you know, in their social media feeds about the importance of mechila and achdus and everyone's in like that kind of mood around now. So like, now's the time to do it. Now's the time to sort of make sure that happens. And very often it means that you have to take the first step, even if you're 100% right, which, by the way, no one is ever 100% right. Maybe 90% right, 95% right. No one's ever 100% right. So even if you're 100% right, yeah, you still take the first step and you try to create shalom, because that's what Klal Yisrael needs. And we do that for the benefit of Klal Yisrael. Okay, have a chesiva, chesima tov, everybody.